So our next speaker is Steve Fenimore from UC Davis, and he is going to talk about automated weed control, new technology to solve an old problem in vegetable crops.
Okay, thanks, Stephanie. Nice to see a full room. I guess we should have asked for a bigger room.
Yeah, I know. I didn't think weed science would be so popular at an agronomy meeting. I'm really impressed.
So, just maybe 15 seconds of information that you ought to know where I'm coming from. This is my second job. I've been with the University of California for 20 years. Prior to that, I spent 10 years in ag chem industry, and I pay a lot of attention to what's going on in ag chem. I think it's important. I'm an extension specialist, so I'm focused on very much on the applied end of it. And we're very much dependent on the business aspects of this. So I think a lot about that. And I have a hypothesis, and I'm going to provide some evidence, I think, to support what I'm talking about. And that is that the locus of invention in weed technology, weed killing technology, to put it very plainly, is shifting away from the agricultural chemical industry. There's a considerable amount of evidence. Just look at Wall Street Journal every few days, and you'll see evidence of merger. There's the pesticide industry. It's expensive to develop new products. And so what I'm going to talk about is technology. So you tell me what you think, please. So herbicide resistance is something that dominates my discipline. I'm a weed scientist. And I like this, and I agree with it, and I basically take this to heart, is that this is by Neil Harker and a number of other prominent weed scientists. Is the only way to prevent or delay herbicide resistance is to minimize the use of herbicides. I work on lettuce. Lettuce is a crop which the agricultural chemical industry, quite frankly, could care less about. You can interpret that as a blessing or a curse. I'll let you decide. So I've come to really tell you about some ideas, and there are no simple solutions, and there shouldn't be simple solutions. But I've come with maybe some answers about how we can kill weeds with other technology. So I'm going to just a quick overview of what I'm talking about. I'm going to contrast the cost of development of herbicides versus technology, and they're very different. And it's fun. I can't make an herbicide, but I can make a machine that kills weeds. I've done it several times with steam, and it's fun, and nobody owns it. And I've been turned down by every chemical company. I don't take it personal, but I have. So I'm going to tell you about it. I'm going to show you some pictures. When I was a kid, I always loved it when the teacher showed movies. I'm going to show you some video clips. So from the chemical company point of view, I mean, I don't know who made them in charge of deciding which crop was important and which wasn't. But they think that, so I'm not going to argue with them. But it's pretty clear from a business case that corn and soybeans are a big deal. You know, 180 million acres, that's a lot of land. I get it. I understand. For herbicides, for pesticides, insecticides, and so forth, it makes sense. It's a very efficient. These are Iowa State University economics, cost of production numbers. I'll contrast that with some of the University of California ones. But field corn clearly is a very efficient system, and the agricultural chemical industry has helped. Vegetables, you know, yeah. Between Arizona and California is about 260,000 acres of lettuce. Yeah, okay. If you're a chemical company, big deal. They haven't done anything in lettuce since Richard Nixon was president. You know, and lettuce is even worse. I think that goes back to when Kennedy was president. So they're minor crops. Again, that's their wording. I don't use that word in the Salinas Valley because lettuce is a big deal. But there are, for pesticides, there are barriers for transfer of technology. That's why IR4 program exists, to go through all of the red tape to help register an herbicide in a small acreage crop, a specialty crop. So this is how we really deal with it. This is the Salinas Valley where I'm at, and we still hand weed, and we don't have herbicide-resistant weeds, but we're spending a whole lot of money. Labor is a huge issue in horticultural crops. It's a huge issue, period, and when we start rebuilding after the hurricanes and the fires, there's going to be a worse labor shortage. And the costs are going up. And the people who do the labor in the field know. They all have cell phones. They all have a brother or a cousin working down the road who's getting paid more money. There is a lot going on in labor. We've got to deal with that. Laura Torti, my colleague, extension economists, they work on these things called cost return studies. So here's the cost of weed management. Remember what it was in Iowa corn. So here's what it is in California vegetables. So these are just, I cherry pick the weed control costs, the herbicide for that's curb, mechanical cultivation, that's a couple of trips through the field, and then there's hand weeding, that's just one trip. And then there's organic spinach, there's no herbicide, but you've got a $500, practically a $500 bill for hand weeding. And that cost goes up every week. So herbicides, in lettuce, we have a Richard Nixon era herbicide registered, Pronamide, 1972. You want to make a new herbicide? You need almost $300 million and 11 years to do it. There's just a few companies left that can do that. So I'm an extension guy. I like simple graphs. I'm sorry. I like simplicity. We don't need statistics here. This is McDougall's survey of the ag chem. It's a good number. The other number is one I gathered. That's the cost of making an intelligent weeder, from Frank Poulsen and Leonard Mole. Frank Poulsen is in Denmark and Leonard Mole is in the Netherlands. A couple of small companies there. 12 million. They both surprisingly came up with a very close to the same number. So vegetable crops in coastal California, we are desperately short of labor, and any aspect of the production cycle that we can use machines to replace hand labor. There's Blue River. I can tell you funny stories about that. About they just were bought by John Deere for $305 million. And I saw the whole thing from beginning to end. It was amazing to watch a bunch of geeky guys that now are rich. Agmatronics, that's a company from a former New Mexico State University technician, and he's rather successful. That's Ryan Hebron. Vision Robotics is a robotic company in San Diego, and Mantis is a local one in the Salinas area. Poulsen on the left, this is the Robovator, which I'll show you a video clip of, and that's from Denmark, made with Danish labor costs. And the other one, Stikkati, the pretty red one, is from the Netherlands. And yes, we do have weeds. I know everybody thinks everything in California is extremely expensive, and mostly that's true. But one advantage that California has in lettuce is besides the weather, is that you can actually grow lettuce from seed. And it's one of the few places in the world you can seed lettuce. So traditionally, you know, they go about 160,000, 170,000 seed per acre, and then they thin it by hand with a hoe, with a crew. That costs you about $150 an acre. You can, and so on the left before and on the right after. That's what it looks like. A nice spacing so you get a commercially acceptable head. So I promise you videos. Here's Blue River. This is their thing. That is thinning lettuce. That's what it does. It's a boring machine, but boring is good in engineering. If this doesn't do anything too dramatic, that's a good thing. Basically, what you're seeing is it's using a caustic spray. Basically, they're using fertilizer solutions AN20 or something like that. There's several witch's brew that they're using. They can also use carfentrazone herbicide. But basically, it's doing the same thing that a hand crew would do. It's killing the lettuce that you don't need. Again, I'm an extension guy. I like simple slides. This is the difference in, on the right is from our cost and return studies. It takes one person 8 hours to hand thin 1 acre of lettuce, 480 minutes, versus 12 minutes for that machine I just showed you. We don't need statistics. It's clearly much more efficient. Intelligent cultivator. This is the finest in Danish engineering technology, and it's pretty cool. I and a colleague in Arizona bought one of these with some research funding. And basically, this machine has cameras on every row. It has lights. It's basically got all of the components needed to operate it in there, the hydraulics. It's got some air that keeps the camera lenses clear of dust. And I've got a video of that on the next one. So basically what the machine is doing isn't, you know, it's hard to do, but conceptually what it's doing, it's just simply weeding around the crop that leaves a little halo untouched around the crop. Herbicides are selective, machines are selective. And there's a whole, fortunately, there's a lot of people getting involved in this. There's a lot of startup money. This is a company from San Francisco that built, this is the first time I've seen an autonomous robot. That was just last August that I took that picture. So here is RoboVader in action. If I can find the cursor, and I can't find the cursor. Huh. Shoot. There it is. Robotic weeding. Usually growers are anxious to see it, but once they look at it for about 10 or 15 seconds, they go, yeah, okay. How much does it cost? That's the subject of discussion. So what does it do? We published a paper in Weed Technology, and these are some results that I picked out of it. This is lettuce and broccoli. This is the weed control. The percentage of the weeds that were removed based on a pre-cultivation count. So the standard cultivator is pretty good, removing about 57% of the weeds present. It leaves that uncultivated band. The RoboVader got about 84%. So it's a 27% improvement. In broccoli, we got almost a 40%. Okay. Our objective is, of course, to control weeds so we don't have to spend so much money on hand weeding. And so here's a comparison, and these were very, very weedy areas. So we spent 34 hours per acre in the standard cultivator versus 27 hours after the RoboVader. So it's not perfect, but that's a 29% reduction. And in broccoli, we saw a 46% reduction. So that machine, the RoboVader, and the Blue River machine there that you saw, is pattern recognition. It's not actually differentiated. It can tell the difference between chlorophyll and dirt clods. So it cannot differentiate, cannot detect the difference between a tomato plant and a black nightshade. This project is designed, it's called crop marking and crop signaling, and David Slaughter at UC Davis is the engineer in charge of this project. And so we're starting out very simple. Our grandiose ideas of marking have been very difficult. So here's a simple idea. These are biodegradable straws that the machine can see. And tomatoes, by the way, in California, are processing tomatoes are mostly transplanted, and we don't stake them out. So that's what that machine does. It's basically seeing where the plant is, and it's cultivating around it. So here's a little bit of results. This is new results from this past summer. These were replicated up to 8 times. We do not have any herbicide in this. And when I talk about standard cultivator, I should have had this earlier, but that's what I'm talking about. It's basically leaving an uncultivated band over the crop row. So here's the results. We had the automated cultivator on the top and the standard cultivator on the bottom. And these are the densities, and then this is the percent reduction. So we're getting a very nice reduction, and there's no herbicide present here. This is all mechanical. And we're getting a 39% reduction in our hand weeding time. And we saw no significant yield loss. We didn't rip out too many plants. So in a row cultivation, you know, definitely works more. I mean, and you could have predicted that because it's simply reaching in the row and it's going where the standard cultivators don't go. So it's doing something that they can't do. And we're not hurting the crop. So this is kind of getting into a bit of a philosophical, what I'm going to leave you with some thoughts, because I think this is important to talk about. I've heard at weed science meetings, people say, well, we need to train students in genetics. Well, genetics is important, but nobody talks much about engineering. Engineering's important. We live in a three-dimensional world. We need to deal with that. And the way that I think about it, herbicides are mountains and technology is a river. The river flows constantly and it's changing constantly. The mountains, I live below a mountain in the Salinas Valley, and I've lived there for 20 years and it looks the same. Treflan is a very, very good herbicide. It was registered in 1963. It's widely used in the West. It's great for dry beans, tomatoes, cotton, a number of other crops. It's a good herbicide. It's 1963 technology. You cannot change Treflan. If you change it, then it's a different herbicide. Whereas our cell phone apps, the electronics, the computer upgrades that we drive us nuts, it really is good for us because it keeps us secure and it keeps us up to date. But it's annoying, I admit it. But it's much more fluid and adaptable, and the barriers to transfer between crops are not so great. So we need to look at this stuff, and we need to talk about this, because the potential is tremendous. I'm talking about lasers and abrasives, which I guess, I don't know whether Frank Frisella or somebody else is talking about that across the hall. It's too bad we couldn't have gotten together. There's thermal methods. I like the thermal methods. They have a lot of potential. There's simple things like high-pressure water, and we need to use big data. That's why John Deere paid all this money for Blue River, because they've made some breakthroughs in big data, in weed recognition, differentiation. Actually, it's crop recognition, and everything else is a weed. We need to deal with laser. We need to address abrasions. There's a researcher in Spain who's working on trying to increase, to make smart abrasion, sandblasting, if you like. Why can't we use high-pressure water? Mark Siemens, an engineer I work with from Arizona, has tried 400 PSI. In industrial settings, they use, 30,000 PSI with diamond dust in them. It works very well, but it's very dangerous. You can go to much lower pressure. Then there's I call it the fried chicken method. Basically, Dave Slaughter and Ken Giles, a couple engineers at Davis, simply used hot oil. And there's the poor nightshade 24 hours after treatment. It is quite dead. Here's Frank Poulsen, wonderful inventor in Denmark. Here's his smart flaming. And look at the weeds smoking behind it. So I told you guys, I like these videos. So what do we need to do? we need to work with industry. We've been working with Monsanto, Syngenta, and so forth for years and years, and that's good. That's all well and good. But there are other partners out there that we need to work with. And our more importantly, we need to train our students so that they can work with them. Because I saw this Blue River deal. It's not fake news. These guys in 5 years created over $300 million worth of technology from nothing. You know, we're doing our students an injustice if we don't train them to deal with startups. I mean, it's a whole new world. Pesticides are a huge barrier, very expensive. You got to work for a big chemical company. These small companies, hey, I'm convinced. This is Tom Friedman's book. It's not my idea. He talks about technology as a river flowing. You know, has anybody read that book here? It's not an easy read, but it's an interesting book. We need to train students to deal with this technology in weed science. That's my term. You know, this is not a simple answer, and thank God it's not simple. I've seen enough simple, the dicamba situation, the Roundup Ready. Simple isn't good. We need a complex, robust, layered, redundant system. But who's going to pay for this? Private funding isn't going to be enough. Government funding isn't going to be enough. We need to figure out how to do this. It's difficult. It's easy to license an herbicide. It clearly is a distinct molecule. But machines are harder. There are ways around it. There are other ways to make machines that get around their patents. There's also lack of coordination. I'm old enough that I remember all of my father's tractors that didn't have three-point hookups because he didn't spend a lot of money on equipment. And that was a tremendous change, and it's standardized now. We don't think anything about that. But that happened. We need standardization. We need a device that can be used on 180 million acres of Midwest large acre crops and also on lettuce fields. I mean, the target of the technology should be some sort of standardization to keep the cost down. Somebody's going to ask me, what do these things cost? They're expensive now, but what point do you price them in time? I put the Farmall in here. I mistakenly, that is the Farmall M, which my father had. There were almost 300,000 of those tractors made. This is actually the second most common one. The John Deere 4020 was the most common tractor, and there were over 300,000 of those made. The more you make, the cheaper they are. We need a robust frame that can be used in a number of crops that can be adapted and so we can create tools that are appropriate for lettuce or for a large acre crop. So I'm very optimistic, and I'm near the end of my career, so I'm not going to see it. So I hope somebody else can run with it. I'm not doing this for my own benefit. I hope it happens. There is opportunity for a new industry out there. Low-risk methods that will be sustainable. I've seen sustainable systems, and they're robust, and they're multi-layered, and they're not simple. How do you do it cheap? That's the question. I don't know. But we need to not forget about organic. Ag-chem, we people say we haven't found a good organic herbicide. Suppress is pretty good, but there are tools out there that can be made to work. And so I'll leave with a mountain picture from Yosemite in the background, unchanging for the last 15, 20,000 years. So automation, I'm pretty well convinced, will create a lot of new tools, and it will create good jobs in a robust industry. I can't wait to see it happen. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you. We have lots of time for questions, so I guess I've got a question. Fire away.
Hi.
Hi. What speed is some of the weeders, like on your video, 3 mile an hour, 5 mile an hour?
So question is, how's the speed? And it depends on the spacing. We, of course, the farmers always say, okay, I see you guys operating at, 1.5 miles an hour, and they do a better job, as you can well imagine, at a slower speed. We had, processing tomatoes, which have about an 18-inch spacing between plants, we've gone up to 5 miles an hour. It was so fast that I couldn't see the knives going. And so it depends on the spacing. For lettuce plants where, it's 8-9 inches, you're looking at about 1.5 miles an hour. Can it go faster? That's a fun subject to talk about, but I won't get into that. But it's basically there's two types of actions. There's one where where you spray, and so whatever you're using to kill the weed or kill the lettuce plant only goes, it's a one-way trip. Where you have a machine that has to retract, that takes twice as much time, so it goes slower. So there's an upper limit. So there's anyway, yeah.
What was the background of, the people that were part of the startup Blue River, like engineers, like what made them interested in taking on that type of startup?
So why did they do it? Primarily software people, and they got some camera people, image people, and put it all together. And I kept telling them, you guys need to get some real ag people, because the first time I worked with them in the field, Salinas Valley is a workaholic place where in the summertime people start at 6:30 or something. These guys show up about 10:30 and we're waiting and waiting and waiting, and they show up with their Starbucks cups and go, okay, where's the field at? And we go, God, it's Friday, days have gone, guys. But their machine worked. So I told them, I had lunch with them later, and I said, guys, you need to get some ag people. You need to get somebody to understand. And they did. Well, obviously they did. It worked. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah. Yes?
Part of the draw of herbicides, as I understand it, is minimum-till or no-till agriculture. And
right.
I wonder if you can talk about kind of how these technologies impact soil health and what research.
So obviously, the question about tillage. So you're concerned about the impact on the soil health. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we cultivate, and most crops in California are cultivated. The tree crops only maybe once a year, vines and so forth. So I don't tend to think about that too much. Probably we should. But I guess, and I anticipated that, I spent about 8 years in Indiana, so I appreciate the need for the no-till. And that's why I think I see potential, and I don't know how fast it can get, in these above-ground treatments that can kill, such as steam, which doesn't use an open flame, which can work quite well if you get superheated steam, which people haven't done that, or the hot oil, or really hot boiling hot water, which they're using in Belgium. I know many Kottweilers working on that. There's the laser, and so we need to pay attention to that, but haven't. It's hard to work on more than one thing at a time, but that there's a need for that. I mean, John Deere, I visited them. They told me they have a 160-foot-wide floater rig that goes like 18 miles an hour. And I go, well, I don't think we're going to get a laser weeder that will fit on that rig. But it's nice to dream. So, but I thanks for the question.
All right. Thanks, Steve.